It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Over the boy.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
This is gonna be huge. Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking. I think that's the worst thing I've ever. That boy ain't right. The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Sometimes you need a little push over the edge. We're going to take you there. Yes, it is a hump day, and we're going to take you right over the top and into the end of your work week. A hump day edition of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we're glad you're with us, and you're always connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Questions, comments, or suggestions, we want to know what's on your sports brain on this Wednesday. 46862. So many different stories can take us so many different directions right now because it just seems like everything's kind of coming up and just popping. It's like popcorn. It's like watching your popcorn when you're waiting for it to finish and you're just watching all those kernels pop individually. That's kind of like sports right now. Not necessarily one huge, overwhelming storyline, but a lot of individual pops happening out there.
What a great metaphor there.
Thank you. I've been working on that all day. I appreciate it. Doing prep, of course, in the car, thinking, got to come up with a metaphor for what we've got today in sports. It's the popping popcorn.
And you're making me hungry.
And, yeah, and it's a snack, too. A lot of things happening on the show today. Coming up at 5:20, we'll be joined by Kent Sterling. We'll talk some popcorn or some sports stories. Numerous topics with Kent Sterling, who will join us coming up at 5:20. If I mentioned before, favorite guest of the show.
Yeah.
I just have to keep saying that. Kent pays me handsomely to make sure to make that comment every time he comes on. All right, so today was officially the day Caitlin Clark gets introduced to the Indianapolis fan base, or the fan base of the Indiana Fever. Never have seen before this kind of hype with any athlete coming into Indy, whether it's by trade, whether it's by draft. It's just the hype is unbelievable around Caitlin Clark. Will she make a difference? Absolutely. No question. She's going to change the franchise. She's going to make the players around her better. She's going to bring more confidence to not only the fan base, but the organization. She is certainly adding significant credibility to the Indiana Fever, and nowhere else is that noticed more than the choice of broadcasting 90% of the Indiana Fever games on national television. And so the hype was on today as she was delivered straight to Cambridge Fieldhouse for introductory press conference. There she got a chance, as you said in the sports update, to meet Tyrese Halliburton, who went to that other Iowa school. And then also had a chance to put on the official Indiana Fever jersey for the first time and go through a photo op. And then she had to meet the press. The media in Indianapolis, nobody threw anything too tough at her. A lot of softballs today for her first introductory press conference. But it was fun to hear the personality. You know, the only time we really have seen her much in interviews is primarily like at halftime or maybe a quick pregame or postgame. But a chance to sit down for 20, 25 minutes and actually talk and answer questions. We got to see more of Caitlin Clark. So it was good. I thought everything went well today with Caitlin Clark's first initial meeting with the Indianapolis media. Now, you know, one of the questions that's been circulating, and they actually asked her directly, is the Fever won the lottery prior to her committing to come out of Iowa. And I guess the question is, was she waiting dependent upon who got that number one pick and what her thoughts were in hearing that it was going to be Indianapolis? And so she talked about how she felt when she learned that Indianapolis and the Indiana Fever were holding the number one pick.
I'm not like a huge big city girl, so
I feel like this is a perfect spot for myself, a place that loves basketball. But more than anything, like, this is in the Midwest. People might think I'm crazy for wanting to stay in the Midwest, but, like, that's just who I am. That's where my roots are. I love the people here. So I think that's what I'm most excited about, of, you know, having an opportunity to come to an organization like this and be in a place where there can be a lot of support for it and have a lot of people around me that I...
And so she also talked about the fact that she had a game the night that the lottery was held, and that she said after the game... She found out it was Indiana that had won the draft lottery, and she said she was really hoping that Indiana would be the team because that's where she wanted to go. Now, that, first of all, perfect answer, exactly what the Indiana Fever fans wanted to hear, is that she's in Indiana because she wants to be in Indiana, not just because the ping pong balls or whatever forced her to come to Indiana. But the fact, I get exactly what she's saying about Midwest, smaller town. I mean, you know, it's tough for someone who grew up in Des Moines and went to college at Iowa City, you know, middle of corn country, the heart of the Midwest, to all of a sudden go to a city like New York or Los Angeles. You know, that's a big city traffic. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. And Indianapolis, fairly easy to get around, very welcoming city with Midwest values. I think it's a perfect place for her if that's what she's comfortable with. If she's very comfortable with her Midwest roots and feels that she's a Midwest girl, then I think she's in the perfect spot in Indiana. She was talking. They were talking about the coaching situation and having Christy Sides as the coach of the Indiana Fever, and the fact that Caitlin Clark has played her whole college career under Lisa Bluter, the head coach at Iowa, and they had a really special relationship. But talking a little bit about what she expects in her relationship with Fever coach Christy Sides.
Being coached is the biggest thing that has allowed me to be where I am today. Like, Coach Bluter never stopped coaching me, no matter how many wins we had, no matter how many points I scored. Like, she just coached me and always knew there was more. And I think Coach would say the exact same thing. I think she probably sees there's a lot more that she can get out of me. She'd probably yell at me for my defense at some point. But I'll probably learn to love it, I'm sure. Or make up with it with my offense. I don't know. But
make up with it or offense. Yeah.
That always helps.
Yeah, that in other words, it's like, I may never become a great defensive player, and don't expect it of me, but I'll try to give you more points than the points I give up at the defensive end. And I thought that was pretty good. Also, they talked about the fact that there's a star player on the Pacers who happens to come from the same state. And we mentioned that she met Tyrese Halliburton. He officially welcomed her into Central Indiana. But she had a chance to talk about the partnership between the Fever and the Pacers.
Yeah, honestly, I've watched the Pacers very closely. My boyfriend works for the Pacers, so I've become quite a fan. But, I mean, Tyrese is incredible, and I just want to congratulate him. Obviously, being named to the USA national team today is pretty special. It's a really hard accomplishment, and obviously he played for a very terrible team in college, but... it's nice to be in the same city now, and, you know... I think the thing I love about him is the way he passes the ball. Like, I watch his game, and it's just incredible what he can do. So, but all of them across the board, I think Coach Carlisle has been tremendous for them, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. And you know, I hope they beat the Bucks.
There you go. Hope they beat the Bucks. She's rooting for the Pacers in the series against the Milwaukee Bucks, which will get started Sunday. And coming up in the show, we'll also tell you the game times have now been announced. And I think the Pacers got the short end of the stick on the scheduling. So we'll tell you why. That's coming up in a little bit. But what else did Caitlin Clark talk about at her introductory press conference? First of all, they asked about the influences she had growing up. In fact, the question that was presented to her was prefaced by saying, "My wife used to shoot buckets and imagine that she was going up against this person or this person." And she wanted me to ask, who was it that you idolized? Who did you look up to? Who did you imagine, you know, shooting that jumper over? when you were a kid and you were working your way to this position, and I thought you had a pretty interesting answer.
I grew up loving the Minnesota Lynx. I probably shouldn't say that anymore. And Tamika Catchings, of course. So.
Yeah, of course. She had to throw in Tamika Catchings. She mentioned Tamika Catchings as soon as she got to the press conference, but of course she realized, you know, I got to be honest, but I'm probably going to get ribbed a little bit for being honest. And you know, this happens. Kids come up, they're fans of other teams. That's not unusual.
Oh yeah, no.
And it doesn't mean it's like, oh, we play Minnesota. I'm going to be so torn on who I want to win.
No. She'll definitely still play her hardest.
But she was a Minnesota Lynx fan, and it's natural. That's the team that was closest to her hometown. So if she loved women's basketball and WNBA, that was probably the team she was most likely to root for. So, it was fun to get to know her, get to see her. She was asked about her appearance on Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you had a chance to catch that, but she said she was extremely nervous.
Understandable.
She said she had flown in at like 7 a.m. or something. She had flown in from L.A. and she said it was a very long day. She was just loading up on Coke and coffee, just getting any kind of caffeine she could get in her to try to make sure she could stay up that late. And so she said, she remembers when she was sitting in the chair just about to get pushed on to the Weekend Update set and just how nervous she was. And she also said, by the way, I did not really write the jokes. I know they said that I wrote the jokes. I didn't write the jokes. It's like, I don't think anybody thought you wrote the jokes.
No.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
Now we can't wait. We got about 5 weeks to wait to actually see her. What, 4 weeks maybe, to see her on the court with the Indiana Fever. 468-6262. All right, so we mentioned this, Adam, that the NBA has announced the start times for the playoff series now. And, well, I don't know if the Pacers got the favor of the schedule makers.
Uh-oh.
Some of it probably controlled by the TV networks on what slots they want to fill with what series. Mm-hmm. But get this. After a 7 o'clock start Sunday night at Milwaukee, Game 2 will be in Milwaukee on Tuesday. It will be an 8:30 Eastern start, 7:30 local. So nothing so dramatic there. I mean, you've got a normal home city start time. And Game 2 of the series is going to be played on NBA TV. It will open on TNT Sunday night, 7 o'clock. Then it shifts to Indiana. And the first playoff game being played at home for the Pacers in 5 years is going to have a 5:30 afternoon start on a Friday. On a Friday.
Come on.
Not only that, but it's also Day 2 of the NFL draft.
Oh, my goodness.
And, so it's Milwaukee at Indiana, Game 3, a 5:30 start. And the reason for it is ESPN is picking up a triple header on Friday night. So they will have the 5:30 game, an 8 o'clock game, and a 10:30 game that night on ESPN. The last two games being part of the West, and Indiana having to start at 5:30 to squeeze it in as the third game of the triple header before the 8 o'clock tip for the primetime game, which I don't know what the primetime game is going to be. They might not know at this point, because until we settle the actual seating in the conferences, I know the networks are probably climbing over themselves trying to get the Denver Lakers series, and I don't know how it's divvied up, if it's TNT has the East and ESPN has the West, or if it's going to be certain nights of the week, but I think that's going to be Denver and Los Angeles is going to be a big time series.
Absolutely.
I mean, forget the seeding. I know it's, you know, it's what, 2 versus 7?
Yep.
Officially.
Yeah.
But that's more like a 1 versus 3 or a 1 versus 4, because I think the Lakers have played as well as anybody in the top four in the West over the last couple of months. They're healthy, Anthony Davis has been out there almost the entire season. LeBron has stayed relatively healthy. So I think that's going to be a great series, but I don't think that the Lakers really, I mean, sometimes it's like you win a game, but you ultimately lose the war. And last night, the Lakers were winners, but they might eventually give up the war because they win against New Orleans, and their reward is they pick up the 7 seed to then take on the Denver Nuggets, the defending NBA champions.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough matchup there against the Nuggets for the Lakers. I think eventually the Nuggets will win in maybe 6 or 7. I don't think it's going to be a sweep like last season, but yeah, it's going to be a tough task for LeBron and the Lakers to get past the Nuggets. But
I could see it being a sweep, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I could see it again going
just maybe
4 or 5 games, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just, you know, first of all, I don't think LeBron has the capability to carry a game like he did in his younger days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we saw that last night, because last night would have been the perfect example of a game that was in question. The Lakers were facing pressure from the Pelicans, who overcame, what was it, an 18-point deficit at one point, and then the Pelicans came back, got it tied. That's a point somewhere in there where LeBron James would just take over. And last night, the best he had in the tank was kind of an off-balance runner.
Yeah.
Where he couldn't finish it at the rim, and a three-pointer.
Right.
He didn't hit either one.
Yeah, he took that wild turnaround, and the only reason you could argue that the Lakers won is because Anthony Davis rebounded it and got fouled.
Yeah, well, and that was at the end of the game.
I'm talking
minutes before that.
Yeah.
When it was like early in the fourth quarter, when it looked like LeBron, you know, wanted the ball in his hands. He wanted to clear out. He wanted to kind of take over. And it used to be, if you could clear out and you could give LeBron space, there was no defender in the NBA that could stop him one-on-one.
Right.
And they stopped him like 3 times. So, you know, it's just not the same. And with that, I think that the Lakers are a little easier to defend. And when you've got the time that the Nuggets will have to prepare and what their game plan is, and obviously already they've got a pretty favorable matchup. They've done well against the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's too much Joker.
I have to agree. Not to mention, they have that home court advantage up in Denver, so that's the altitude,
the high
too.
Altitude, yeah.
Always something to think about.
Yeah, it would have been, you know, nice for Denver if they could have gotten a team that would have had short rest, you know, to get them into the high altitude.
That does help.
But, you know, the Lakers might get their day and a half early and be able to kind of take in. I wonder if they'll go on Friday or if they will do like they normally do on Saturday, but if they'll go on Friday just to adjust to the high altitude before they play on Sunday?
I'll check here for you.
There's a couple of games scheduled for Saturday, and I'm starting to think that might be a Saturday night prime time.
It is Saturday night.
Okay, so they could go tomorrow. I don't know what their schedule's going to be, but the other game last night, the Sacramento Kings eliminated the Golden State Warriors.
Called it.
Yeah, Adam, you were 2 for 2 last night. You got both games correct. So I was 1-1. I said this. I wasn't going to bet against Golden State until they proved that the run is over. And officially now, I think the run has definitely ended.
Definitely
ended. Yeah. The Klay Thompson.
Oh, man.
0 for 10 last night, never scored.
Ugh, real bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be one of the big three.
And he's supposed to be potentially testing his value in the market.
Yeah, it didn't look good last night.
Didn't raise your value last night.
No. So, I think things are kind of done for Golden State.
Yep.
I think the league's passed them by. The roster has gotten kind of top heavy with a lot of young players. I think they just need to rebuild, try to build a young core. They need to do essentially what Indiana did.
Absolutely.
Or Sacramento. Sacramento's
sure.
Another example of
yeah.
Somebody who decided we're going young, we're finding a young core, and then we're building around that young core. And Sacramento, because it's young, they also are able to add 8-9 talented players instead of 3 with the rest of the roster filled in with low-value young players. And so you saw that depth last night. You saw different guys that stepped up than just the superstars. I mean, you know, Murray's a solid player. He's a 10, 11 point per game scorer during the season.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the star last night. 8 for 13 from three.
Yeah, lit it up.
And I think he ended up with 34 points, 9 rebounds, the former Iowa star. So, yeah, Sacramento looked very good. Now you've got Sacramento going to New Orleans, and it could be a Pelicans team that has to play without Zion Williamson because he left the game hurt with about 3 minutes left last night. And it didn't look serious at the time, but what did they ever announce what they found from the MRI?
Let's go to today's top stories and find out.
Look at that. How about that for a tease? You don't even have to wait very long because it's time for today's top headlines, including the Pelicans news from Adam Lundy.
Never thought you'd hear that, but New Orleans Pelicans forward Zion Williamson has been ruled out of Friday's play-in tournament elimination game against the Sacramento Kings with a left hamstring strain, the team announced today. The Pelicans said an MRI last night confirmed the injury, and Williamson will be reevaluated in approximately 2 weeks. So it's looking good for the Sacramento Kings to get into that eighth seed.
Big hurt. Big hurt for, you know, because they need the bodies. When you look at the Sacramento lineup, Sabonis, you know, it's just going to be a tough matchup, I think, numbers-wise for New Orleans.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk about this story more a little bit later in the show as well, but the Toronto Raptors' Jontay Porter has been banned from the NBA for life after an investigation revealed he had disclosed confidential information to bettors, limited his participation in at least one game while he was with the Raptors, and bet on NBA games while playing in the G League. The NBA said in a release announcing Porter's ban that its investigation remains open and that it is sharing information with the federal authorities. And a quick MLB update here for you regarding some area teams. The White Sox are down 3-2 to the Royals in the bottom of the eighth. In the bottom of the third, the Diamondbacks have a 1-0 lead over the Chicago Cubs. The Tigers fell 5-4 to the Rangers today. And the Reds and the Mariners are scoreless after one inning. And that's your top stories today, Brett.
And one bonus score, the Padres fall to the Milwaukee Brewers. 1-0. Brewers got a run across with two outs in the bottom of the eighth inning and then held on for the 1-0 series-ending victory as the Padres come up just short in their attempt to sweep the Brew Crew.
I was hoping to sneak past that score, but you brought it up.
Well, there's a couple of things there. First of all, the Padres, who have obviously former tin caps that play for them, but the other, there's still some Brewers fans in this community. I know a number.
Yeah.
And for Cubs fans, they always track what the Brewers are doing. And so I thought we better slip in that Padres Brewers score.
Well, I do appreciate it. I just was hoping for a Padres win.
Padres came up just short, 1-0. All right. Coming up on the show, we got news about Bill Belichick. Why didn't he get the Atlanta job? Some news reporting has surfaced that makes it look rather interesting about some of the comments made perhaps by the New England Patriots owner. Not exactly the job reference you want to get from your former boss. Also, how young is too young when it comes to college recruiting? We'll talk about that. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4-6. Also coming up on the show today, we've got Shane Alberani to talk about the wrap-up of the Comet season and tomorrow's fan experience, where you get a chance to get those jerseys and meet the players and thank them for a final time before they all head off to their summer activities. Kind of premature to have the season-ending jersey auction when it's supposed to be after the playoffs. It's not supposed to be right now. It's just kind of surreal.
Yeah, a little early.
But we'll talk to Shane coming up at 5:20. Kent Sterling also joins us in our second hour. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Not sure if you heard about this, and it was a player I'm not all that familiar with, but there is a player right now at Memorial Park who is in eighth grade. And yesterday, there was a lot of buzz on social media about the fact that she had received her first Division I offer. I didn't know who it was, but Janaea Cooper, I looked her up, and she is an eighth grader at Memorial Park, has not entered high school, and received her first Division I offer, and it is from Purdue Fort Wayne.
Huh.
Now, you know, it's obviously it's very young, and a lot of things are going to change over the 5 years. I've never been a huge fan of this, but I understand why you do it. There's reasons. Number one, you're trying to make a statement that local products are our priority. The players that play in our community prior to their collegiate careers, those are the players we most want to stay at home and play for the Mastodons. And you make that statement by being the first one to officially offer them a Division I offer. And there's been a few others that the Mastodons have offered. Some maybe not right in Fort Wayne, but there's some in Indiana where they've received their first Division I offer from the Mastodons. But the other factor in this is you can never go back and not be first. Like, you know, there's only one that's going to be first and forever. The rest of this girl's life, her first Division I offer is never going to change. Doesn't matter where she goes and plays. Doesn't matter if she ends up being a Mastodon or not. That her first Division I offer, the most memorable offer she's probably going to get, is the offer she got from Purdue Fort Wayne.
Yeah, it's kind of like, even if it doesn't pan out to her joining the Purdue Fort Wayne Mastodons, it's kind of like the local D1 team is recognizing that they are looking at talent in our area and kind of wanted to be that first to recognize that, hey, we see you on the rise here. We're going to show that we care about the players in our community coming up through the ranks. So, I can see why they did it, Brett.
There's no place like home.
Yeah.
No place like home. That, you know, if you're a star in this community, why not stay, represent the 260 and play right here on campus? And so Janaea Cooper has an offer, and she'll be going somewhere to high school. Now, the question is, I'm not sure exactly where she's going to high school or if she's made her high school decision yet. So we'll have to, maybe somebody will have to, now that she's got a Division I college offer, actually have to make a formal high school offer. I'm sure there's some coaches that have probably already sent the word that they would love to have her as part of their program. But, you know, it's exciting. But what do you think about it? Let us know. 46862, 46862. Bill Belichick, he was one of the finalists for Atlanta, and there was a lot of buzz at some time during the coaching search that Bill Belichick was going to be the choice of Arthur Blank in Atlanta to become the next coach of the Falcons. But here's an interesting story that was put out today that apparently Robert Kraft, who spoke glowingly about Bill Belichick when the two sides were separating and about the relationship they've had over the years, apparently behind the scenes, he was not saying as favorable of things about Bill Belichick. In fact, at one point said, you can't trust him.
Wow.
And apparently that is something that Kraft delivered in a conversation with Blank. And it was somewhat of a lack of endorsement for Bill Belichick's character. And as a result, Blank got some cold feet, decided maybe that wasn't the direction they wanted to go.
Huh. That is strange.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's like, boy, don't list them as a reference if you're not sure what they're going to say.
And it's like, is it bad blood between Kraft and Belichick? Did he not want to see him go coach somewhere else?
Or does Kraft feel his loyalty is to the owners?
Hmm.
More so than the coach. And, you know, he did the right thing and was loyal to the coach and what he said publicly, but maybe behind closed doors, he feels like he should be loyal and honest. And maybe that's the way Kraft really feels. That, you know, there were times he didn't trust Bill Belichick, or there were times that he didn't think the job was getting done or something. All I know is he did not give a glowing reference for Bill Belichick, and it caused Arthur Blank then to maybe get some cold feet, not make that hire. Now, Bill Belichick is in the news. He also was on another radio program earlier today where he has expressed that he has interest in returning to coaching next year. And he's even come out to say that he has three jobs that he would really covet if they would be available. So he's already out trying to start the early process of selling himself to the New York Giants, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Dallas Cowboys. All three have coaches that you could consider to be a little bit on a warm seat, if not a hot seat. Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia has to start hot. He might be gone while the season goes on. And then you've got the Giants, kind of a similar situation, came out under Brian Daboll and played so great, but then things started to slide away last year. And now you're going to see a little bit of a new look roster with Saquon Barkley no longer in New York. And then, of course, the Dallas Cowboys, it's always a situation where you're not sure if Jerry Jones is pleased with what he's getting from his coach. He has stood behind Michael McCarthy, but you do have to wonder if this is the last chance for McCarthy to advance in the playoffs. Jerry Jones obviously has expectations. He also realizes he may not have a lot of time left, and he wants it done now, and he wants somebody to get it done for him. He wants that Super Bowl. And so far, the Cowboys, despite numerous really good regular seasons, have been a failure in the playoffs. And so you wonder, will Jones continue to tolerate playoff failure, and will that job open up? But Bill Belichick has made it clear that he does want to return to coaching, and those are three jobs that he would like, all in the NFC East.
Yeah, it's interesting to predict if we'll see Bill Belichick back on the sideline. He's certainly going to be dipping his toes into the media market a little bit. It's been reported that he's going to be joining Pat McAfee for the draft next week.
Yeah, he well, and that's where he was today.
Oh, okay.
Making his appearance as he now, he's kind of taking one of those roles like Aaron Rodgers had, mm-hmm. like the paid weekly appearance or something. But Bill Belichick, of course, what does he know about the draft? You'd have to invite Bill Belichick and his dog to get a perspective on the draft. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Coming up on the other side, Jonte Porter. Oh, my goodness. Not good. And we'll tell you what the NBA is doing about it. That came down today. Jonte Porter, who was under investigation by the NBA, and the NBA investigators found out that the Raptors forward guard, I don't think it even matters at this point.
Yeah, he was like a forward center type.
He apparently got involved with the betting side of things, and today the league has announced that Jonte Porter's banned from the NBA permanently.
Yeah. For life.
For life.
You're done.
He just went where you cannot go. And what the league turned up is that prior to the Raptors' March 20th game, Porter disclosed confidential information about his own health status to an individual that he knew was an NBA better. And also he added that another individual with whom Porter associated and was known to be an NBA bettor, subsequently placed an $80,000 parlay proposition bet with an online sports book to win $1.1 million, wagering that Porter would underperform, where you play the over-under player props, in that March 20th game. The league's investigation also found Porter limited his own game participation to influence the outcome of one or more bets of his performance in at least one Raptors game. Now, here's what they found. They were investigating multiple games, but once they got to this March 20th game and they had enough evidence that it was, a sure thing, they didn't even worry about, I think, the other games. They didn't necessarily complete the investigation of those other games that were in question, because I knew there was like a March 20th, a March 29th, I think, originally, but this is all based pretty much on the March 20th game. Porter played only 3 minutes and then left the game claiming he felt ill. And with the unusual betting activity and actions of the player pulling himself out of the game, feeling, quote, ill, the $80,000 proposition bet was frozen and it was never paid out. So somebody didn't collect on their $1.1 million that they thought they had coming. Also, January through March of this year, while traveling with the Raptors or the G League affiliate, the Raptors 905, Porter placed at least 13 bets on NBA games using an associate's online betting account. The bets range from $15 to $22,000 with a total that was placed of $54,094. And the total payout ended up being over $76,000. So he actually won about $22,000 on those bets. Now, none of the bets involved the game in which the Raptors played. So he wasn't placing.
That is not true.
Or Porter played. I'm sorry. That Porter played in.
Right.
So he couldn't control the actual outcome, but he was betting on games that the Raptors played, including them in some parlay bets. And Porter bet in all cases the Raptors would lose. And all three bets lost. So he was much better off when he didn't bet on the Raptors.
Yeah.
But that was enough evidence for the NBA to decide that's the death penalty. That's no more NBA for you. He is now banned for life.
I hope that $22,000 net profit was worth it.
Yeah.
Considering you've already made over $2 million in the league.
Yeah, he's probably probably spent $22,000 on attorney fees from this investigation. But ultimately, he just went where you cannot go. There cannot be a question about players that their individual performance is subjective like that to be an advantage for certain sports bettors.
No, and giving away the fact that you're likely going to be taken out of a game or miss part of a game and revealing that to player or people that can go bet the unders on all your stats, that's just out of line.
Yeah, basically he was revealing for that game because it talked about the fact that he had given him inside information. He revealed that he was not going to play the whole game, that he was going to leave the game due to illness. And so the bettor pounded on the unders for Jonte Porter that night. And of course, the unders delivered. Now, the crazy thing is that he didn't pound just that bet. He actually put that into a parlay.
Yeah.
But because that bet was part of the parlay, however many other legs of the parlay he had that must have won because they froze it. But and so they didn't pay him on it. But he didn't just bet it straight up as the only bet. He actually put it onto a parlay ticket. But anyway, not good news for Jonte Porter. Question about Mike Woodson. Is his desire to prepare guys for the NBA now overshadowing his ability to get IU to win games? In other words, his interest in going to the portal and getting the guys he thinks he can prepare for the NBA, because it seems to be something that highly motivates Mike Woodson at this point in his career, is to bring guys in to a college program where he can prepare them to be individually successful at the NBA level. And it's a lot of, he's putting a lot of pride into this. He's putting it on the sign. And he's truly building a program much more like the NBA G League elite than he is a college basketball program. But instead of looking at guys that fill roles, work well with teammates, he is looking for the superstars. And, we've talked about that last year, for Indiana to be a really good team, they had to have that complement of shooters that the good teams have. I mean, you look around and it seems like every good team in college basketball, the one thing that's a constant is they can shoot the three or have three-point specialist where they can set up certain guys for shots. And, you look at Dalton Connect at Tennessee. You look at Cam Spencer at UConn. You look at guys like Fletcher Lawyer and what Braden Smith and Mason Gillis did at Purdue. You know, that the top teams seem to have those three-point guys that they can get shots when they want them to get shots. And it's a big glaring weakness in Indiana's roster construction right now that they just don't have those three-point shooters. And so far what they've recruited a high school guy who's known for a good mid-range game. They recruited a guy out of Washington State, Miles Rice, who is, again, more of a slasher but not known as a prolific three-point shooter. And they recruited a big who is a guy that many consider to have the raw tools to be drafted into the NBA. He's athletic enough. He's big enough. Not a great shooter from distance. In fact, he doesn't take three-pointers. He's more the pick-and-roll type of game, rebounder. But what's he getting? He's getting guys that have NBA futures, but it doesn't necessarily mean they connect well and create a great college roster. And so what is the recruiting goal right now for Mike Woodson at Indiana? Is it to bring in guys that are the stars that become, you end up getting a front table at the NBA draft where you can sit there like Cal always did with his two or three players and offer the handshakes, the hugs, and everything else? Or is he looking at cutting down nets and is one interfering with the other? Or can they both coexist? That's the question. Can they coexist? Can you win in college basketball with a lot of individual star power, but not necessarily a real good complementary roster? Because we always talk about roster construction, how important it is. It's a question we're going to ask Kent Sterling when we have him on coming up around 5:30 this afternoon. But 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Give us your text. We'll take a break. We've got another hour coming up on this hump day. And in our next hour, we talk to Shane Alberani. A recap of the Comet season and a look ahead to tomorrow's jersey auction. Also, Kent Sterling joins us. It's a popcorn day. We've got all kinds of sports stories, and the kernels are popping one at a time. We'll keep you up to date as we take you up to 6 o'clock with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.